We're live. All right, welcome to a new episode of the Electric Podcast. Electric. I'm Fred Lambert, your host, and I'm joined by Seth Weintraub, who's coming us live from Portland,
Oregon.
Oregon, right?
Yeah.
There we go.
Got my shirt as well. we were invited to Chevy's 2020 Bolt, Chevy Bolt EV, I guess, try and drive event. We can't post about it on our website until Monday, but we're allowed to talk about it on social media. Unfortunately, like, the biggest problem is that there's not much to talk about.
What are you talking about? There's plenty to talk about.
Yeah,
we have an hour of the show. You couldn't list all the new features that are available in the 2020 Volt TV.
I wish I could in an hour, but let me give it a try. Battery is 10% more. 10% bigger, so that's actually really nice. It goes from 238 miles of range in the old version to 259 miles, which is, like, pretty impressive for a 66 now kilowatt hour battery. They did this by using the exact same battery pack, exact same cell size, but LG, in the three or four years since the original Bolt was developed, has got 10% more power by increasing the number of layers in the packs. There'll be more in the post about that. But, like, unfortunately, they didn't do much else. So it doesn't charge at a top rate that's any higher. So it's still 55 kilowatts, usually usable 54 kilowatts. But the good news about charging is that instead of kind of starting at 55 kilowatts and then just heading down, like, at around 30%, it actually stays, and we tested this at an Electrify America fast charger. It stays at, like, over 50%, over 50 kilowatts of charge, way past 50% of charge. So that'll give you much faster. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good. So
that's OZ-like almost.
Yeah, it's a big
Audi-like, Audi-like.
Yeah, it's a big deal, and it's, I think it's no surprise that these are LG cells, so I think everybody's kind of getting this faster charge. And also Chevy is supposed to have a better charge when it's cold. Unfortunately, they didn't. So we started in southern Seattle, Tacoma, and we drove to Portland, Oregon, where I am now. And the drive was a little over 200 miles. We went the kind of scenic route, lots of hills, lots of turns, lots of good scenery. But it was actually about 32 degrees in Seattle when we left, or zero Celsius. And when we took off, I was like, oh, they probably prepared the battery pack. You can heat the battery pack before you take off. And to my surprise, it wasn't heated. And when we sat down in the car, I was actually with Tom Malogny, who's another EV advocate and journalist. We were kind of like, this is supposed to have a bigger range. And the range that we were seeing in the car was under 200 miles. And basically the first, half hour, 45 minutes we were riding the car, the battery was, like, frozen, cold. So we actually, driving on a kind of trafficy highway where we normally get in my Bolt, which I own a Bolt I have for almost 3 years. I drive it almost every day. I would expect to get four miles per kilowatt, and we were getting, like, under 2 miles per kilowatt in the initial half hour, 45 minutes, because we were running on a cold battery. So Chevy a little bit dropped the ball on not having those cars heated when we left, or the batteries heated. That being said, we're pretty much...
You have to be plugged in for that, right? So normally you're plugged in, and then you know when you're going to leave, and you precondition the battery pack for when you leave.
Exactly. You precondition
the
battery,
for their tests,
battery pack and heat up the car, neither of which was done.
Yeah.
So that was a little...
But no, to do that, normally with those press events, oftentimes they don't necessarily have enough... if they use an hotel where they are a charging station, there are not enough of them.
Exactly.
And so they use nearby fast charging stations, or even sometimes level 2 stations. So the timing to get it right is probably more difficult. Maybe some other people were okay though.
Yeah, so
if they were like, yeah, like,
there was actually two press drives, and the one before us, the weather was like, I guess it was like 55, which is like 10, 12 degrees Celsius. And it was a little bit rainy, but for the most part, nobody had problems getting all the way to Portland without stopping at the fast charger. For us, like, we were actually mildly concerned that we were even going to make it to the fast charger, which is, I think, still a few miles outside of town. So the temperature difference made a huge difference on the Bolt. But, you know, again, if they had the charging infrastructure to precondition the car, we would have been fine. So that being said, you know, I think you can tell from the sarcasm that we were a little bit bummed about how many things were updated about the Bolt. Like, for instance, my riding partner has a bit of a bad back, and he says, you know, when he did a 7-day test drive on the Bolt, he couldn't do it because his back hurt too much in the seats, and they made him a little softer. So I have the original Bolt. They made them a little softer going back, but there's still like no lateral support at all in the seats, and they're kind of small. So the complaint is like, just like, you don't have to do rocket science. Just go to the Chevy Cruze, pull the seat out of there, put it in the Bolt, and like 90% of the people would be happy.
Chevy Cruze.
Cruze is a little bit bigger. I
don't remember it being in the Chevy Cruze. I don't know.
Yeah. So anyway, point is the journalists there kind of felt that Chevy wasn't listening to feedback about the Bolt, and I think the general consensus was that Chevy isn't really focused on the Bolt. They're more focused on their next generation products. You know, we've heard about the Cadillac crossover and another Chevy crossover that are coming, probably not next year, but the year after.
The first Chevy's crossover is supposedly based on the same platform as the Bolt. So, well, probably some the interior is going to be different for sure, but powertrain wise, it might be the same. Which, if that's the case, would be crazy. So surprising, especially like charge rate wise, if they still have that 50 kilowatt charge rate. So 55, I should say.
Well, what's particularly frustrating about the charge rate is when you drive a Chevy Bolt and you go into full regen, you're getting 70 kilowatts back into your battery, and you can't even get that 70 kilowatts at a charging station. So theoretically, you could go to like a reverse dyno and have them run your tires backwards or forwards. And regen off of that and actually charge at 70 kilowatts, which is, you know, kind of insane. But like,
so, we know, so what's the bottleneck then to a higher
the bottleneck is the wiring. They just decided not to do wiring that could handle 70 kilowatts. And
between the charge connector and the battery pack, that's it.
That's what they said. And they were like, it's too big of a thing to do, you know, redesign the car. And I'm like, it doesn't seem like it's that big a deal. I mean, we know the batteries can take it. Like, if not from Chevy, if, you know, from the other companies that are using the exact same batteries from LG. So it just seems like, and this was the general consensus among the journalists, that Chevy's mind or GM's mind is elsewhere. They're clearly intent on selling electric vehicles. I think they are, you know, it sounds like they have kind of a skeleton team working on the Bolt. And their real like talent is working on the next generation of electric vehicles from GM. So, I mean, the Bolt is still a solid car. Like, I, you know,
it has new colors too. Don't forget that. What's new colors?
Oh, yes. And, you can see from our tweets that, I was driving around in the Oasis blue, which doesn't really describe it. I would say it's kind of like somewhere between robin's egg and turquoise.
You're supposed to know what that means.
I don't know. Robin's egg. You've seen a robin's egg in turquoise. It's a little bit green. Got a little green in there. But it's definitely – it sticks out. Like, I know we got stopped a couple times. People were like, what the heck is that thing? Like, you know, where did you get that painted? So that – and they have another color that's something orange that looks like the other orange that they had before. So I don't think that's too surprising. And then, you know – I can't even believe they told us this, but the front spoiler is now 3D plastic instead of just a sticker. Actually, and one other additional improvement is the rear cameras and the rear view mirror have
HD now.
They're now HD. And there's a few buttons that you can kind of tool around with to get, you know, a better... It's actually nice. BMW has the same thing where it kind of simulates a looking down on the car thing. So if you're in a really tight spot, you can see all the stuff around you. Mm. Anyway, that's...
So you don't have that on your... On yours?
We have it, but it's much nicer on the new one.
The resolution is...
The resolution, and also I think they've done something else, like you can kind of get a good look at the front, a good look at the back. So they kind of zoom in on the front if you choose. So there's like a little menu there. Anyway, you know, I kind of came here expecting like a surprise, like a, you know, they're going to say, oh, it's a 250 horsepower motor now. Or, you know, we have a special all-wheel drive version of the Bolt or something like that. And
jeez, you had your hopes up.
Well, I didn't know. And I was like, well, they're having an event. Like, I don't think they would just have an event all the way on the other side of the country for.
Of course.
But they did. So we were here. There was.
You don't remember last year or no, earlier this year or last year?
Yeah, they did.
I think last year I went to, they bring me to, well, actually I drove there, so it's not that bad, but they flew in plenty of people to do the Bolt TV 2019, which had even a
less
smaller upgrade. But there was also the 2019 Volt at the same time that had a, well, also had a fairly minor upgrade. So,
right.
I think that's pretty much standard for Chevy.
Well, anyway, they were super nice. They're super informative. You know, I'm always kind of curious, like how many people in the Chevy team actually drive the Bolt, like on a day to day basis. Mm. And you know, two of the guys were like, "Yeah, this is my daily driver. I know everything about it." But it kind of upset me because last time, one of the head people told me, "No, I can't drive a Bolt because you know I go to my family's house in Chicago," and I'm like, "Dude, you're GM. Put a fast charger between Detroit and Chicago. It's not that hard." And you know, that guy's gone now. And then again, this time I talked to kind of the head person. I was like, "What are you driving these days?" And it was like a Buick LaCrosse. And I was like, "That's actually kind of the same size as a Bolt. Like, why would you not drive a Bolt?" And the same answer, like, "I have to drive to Indiana." I'm like, there's like between Detroit and Indiana, there's plenty of fast chargers. I mean, this is like 3 or 4 years later. And it was just like kind of went over the head. Like you realize that
you're representing the product. I think she literally said, "I don't want to learn how to use the charger." I think that was her response.
Right. Right. So she was like, crazier. I don't want to deal with the DC fast charging. And I was like, holy crap. You know, like this is a problem. Anyway,
it's an education problem on many level, really. Cause the car is in itself. Well, you can argue that you don't want to sit there with at 50 kilowatts, which is, I think it's still the biggest complaint about the car. I mean, coming out of the whole thing, like, again, I guess the seats, you're right about the seats alone, but that I would agree that's more minor changes. I think you just put a 100 kilowatt system in there, like charging system, and you're basically going, maybe the price, I would argue also as a factor, but the charging, the DC fast charging system for sure.
That'd I be think the biggest change. You do whatever you have to do to get that price down to 30,000. Mm-hmm. I think they could drop, you know, they're at 66 kilowatts now. I think they could do, you know, whatever the, what is Tesla's standard range or battery? It's like 50 kilowatts.
Closer to 50.
Kilowatt hours.
50, yeah.
If they did a 50 kilowatt hour and they could do it at $30,000, I feel like that would be the sweet spot for the Bolt, and it would still have over 200 miles of range. So I kind of feel like if they were really thinking about genuinely trying to sell a lot of these things, then
you sure though with 200 miles of range would be very close, though, right?
Yeah, I mean it would be a lighter car theoretically, you know.
Yeah. But I think for the price, the biggest thing is the volume. They're just not making that many of them,
right?
If they would. But at the same time, if it was cheaper, they probably sell more. So they could figure out the sweet spot. Let's say if we do get it down to $30,000, And to do that, we need to make like 50,000 a year instead of whatever they're making now, like 20 to 30. Then they probably could sell those. However, where are they now in the US with the federal tax credit?
So they are a quarter behind Tesla. Is that right? No, maybe they're three quarters behind Tesla. So they just this on October 1st, they went down from 3750 to 1875 or whatever. No. So they have another two, this quarter and the first quarter of 2020 to have the 1800, whatever.
So that would be one quarter behind Tesla.
Yeah, one quarter behind Tesla. So not good for GM. I wish GM would kind of lobby harder, but I know I don't think it's really in their court either.
Well, they did the same as Tesla. Basically, they signed that letter or whatever right. with Nissan and Tesla. That's about it. And I just don't think they think it's doable with the current climate, political climate.
Right.
Just, everyone looks like that. I was like, oh, can we really pass a law about that?
Yeah, we can't really do anything. No.
So that's coming in dealerships when? Did they tell you that at least?
Yeah, so the problem is GM's people are not working right now. You know, the strike.
Oh.
So.
Yeah.
It's not determined.
The union workers.
Right, it's the union strike. So it's not determined when that's going to end. And theoretically, I mean, they haven't made any, you know, before the strike. So when they're going to be available in dealerships is going to depend on when the union goes back to work. So undetermined. But, you know, to be honest with you, you're going to be fine with the 2019 Bolt as long as you don't need that top tier range.
Yeah, I would keep a lookout on
for deals.
On, we don't have a good idea of the inventory right now, but I could try to look into it because I'd be on the lookout for deals for on the 2019. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, we already saw a bunch of good. Actually, I hate to say it, but I wouldn't really recommend anyone buying an actual full TV for like long
for this price.
Midterm resell value. Unless you do get like a crazy good deal, but there's also great deals on leases too. And a lease, I mean, if you're leasing from a gas car to a Bolt and you start looking into the gas savings and everything, could definitely be worth it. It's just, I think like for midterm resale value, if you want to keep that car for 5 to 10 years, you're going to get a big hit on the price. Like it's not going to be worth more much in the 5 to 10 years, I think.
That's true, especially with that charging rate and the, I mean, you know, if you're not doing long trips, it's still a great car. Like, I actually think, like, beyond Tesla, if you're looking for a small car, like, if, you know, you put it up against the Kia Niro or the Hyundai.
It's competitive.
Yeah, it's competitive still, like, you know, 4 years later. And frankly, I think I would rather have a Bolt because it's a little bit smaller, a little bit faster, I think, off the line. You know, obviously, I would probably prefer like a Model Y if I'm shopping in the next couple of years. But you know, it's there. It's a great car. It's a great EV. It's just a little bit disappointing that it feels like GM has kind of left it out to pasture.
So your lease is coming up. When is coming up?
I think May.
May. Oh, okay. So you still have some time.
Yeah,
I saw something.
I don't know what I'm going to do.
So you haven't decided. You haven't decided what you're going to do yet again.
No,
I mean May. You're almost approaching those Model Y days. Almost like
right. I will say that I did stop by the Chevy dealer to see if they would give me some kind of you know extension or good deal on a new Bolt, and they were totally. They had no idea what electric vehicles they had or didn't have or anything. So the biggest problem remaining for GM is that their dealers are. Like I would go beyond that. They're apathetic. They are actually EV hostile. Unless you find the right guy who's been, you know, who went to the seminar and got trained up. Everybody else in the building is hostile to EVs. Mm. So that's their biggest problem. I think they need to solve. And if they don't realize that, they need to kind of do some blind testing.
Yeah. All right. We're gonna move on from Chevy. Go into the Tesla news this week, which was pretty light, so not going to spend too much time on it. But quickly, Tesla pickup truck comes back into the news. We haven't heard much about it for a while now, but apparently it's still coming next month. We're still going to see a prototype next month. That's what Elon said. There's no, the plans haven't changed. They're still aiming for a November unveiling. And we already have a good idea based on what the comments that Elon said in the past few months, the specs of the truck, at least, even the price. Though I'm all a bit skeptical about it. It did say it would cost less than $50,000. I mean, good luck on that, but we'll see. The design is the biggest unknown right now. Like, no one has any idea what the design is going to look like. Elon said cyberpunk. He said Blade Runner-like. It's anyone's best guess what that actually means. However, I was watching Joe Rogan's podcast earlier, and I don't know if you know this, but apparently Joe Rogan and Elon Musk are friends now. And since, even though he made him smoke weed on the show and cussed the Tesla's market cap billions of dollars because of it. Anyway, Joe Rogan saw one of many fan renderings of the Tesla semi pickup truck. One that we actually posted, it was from a Turkish designer named Emre Usman, and probably one of the most popular fine design out there so far. Like, it looks great. Although it was pre-teaser image from Tesla that had the little like continuous headlight that goes around the truck and everything that threw off a bunch of people. But anyway, Joe Rogan thought that it was the actual design of the truck, sent it to Elon Musk with a text like, hey, looking good, your truck is looking good. But Elon responded, that's not a truck, of course. And interestingly, he did say that Tesla's truck is actually more, and I'm quoting here, Blade Runner-esque than this fan design from Mr. Husman, which you can check out on Electrek. We posted a bunch of different pictures. And that design was already, in my opinion, at least in the futuristic side of things when it comes to the design that the fans did for the truck. So even more, well, when I say Blade Runner S doesn't necessarily mean more futuristic. I mean, Blade Runner was definitely set in the future. What was it? It was like 2050 or something like that, 2050. So it is in the future, no doubt. But there's also a cyberpunk quality to the universe, I think, of Blade Runner. So that might be more what he's thinking. But I mean, from a major automaker, because I consider Tesla a major automaker now, they're producing cars at a rate of 400,000 a year. For a major automaker to release like a cyberpunk-like vehicle as a major new vehicle program almost sounds like a joke to me. So I'd be surprised about that. However, we've seen plenty of automakers releasing like very futuristic type of design, but they're mostly for concept vehicles. So now Tesla, of course, we know, and something that Musk has been talking a lot about, they don't do concept vehicles. They release a prototype, and that's what the production car is going to look like, or even better, based on Elon's word. And so far, I have to say he's been true to that. I mean, would have been good in the Model X. There was some aspect in the prototype that were like more concept, like it didn't
make it to production. Like the side mirrors,
other than that, like
were cameras.
Yeah, side mirrors. The dash, the center display was also like more
right.
Model 3 like was sticking out of the dashboard.
I think the front end actually looked better than the Model 3, and you know the fascia is what actually ended up being the update to the Model 3. It looks more like the Model X.
Yeah, correct. Model 3 prototype, though, looked very, very close to the Model 2 production version. So they've been going toward that for sure. But anyway, so now we are already been looking forward to the unveiling, but the hype train keeps going faster, in my opinion. Very much looking forward to it. My biggest concern right now is really the price thing. Like, I mean, especially with the specs that you announced, like over 300 miles of range, even option with like higher range, but let's say that the base version is 300 miles. A cost under $50,000 makes no sense to me, because if you look at what is Tesla's biggest vehicle right now? It's the Model X. And it starts at, what, $85,000, closer to $90,000? Yeah. So not even close. Of course, the Model X is more of a luxury vehicle, so I'm sure they could make it less luxurious since it's a pickup truck. But still, so as people expect a certain level of luxury in $50,000 pickup truck these days, so it cannot they cannot cut that much on that front. So something to keep in mind. But yeah, I'd be very curious on this. There's a whole new, of course, it's going to be built on a new platform. So there's that. I assume that by the time it reaches volume production, which won't be until 2021, if we're lucky, probably 2022, in my opinion, there has to be some battery pack improvement there in terms of cost. I would assume Tesla would be well under $100 per kilowatt hour at that point. So that would make a big difference. But even now, I think Tesla's battery pack cost is not has to be less than one third of the cost of their cars, right?
I mean, it depends on the car, but...
Or around that. Yeah. So even that alone cannot do it, cannot reach that price point, in my opinion. But we'll see. Again, the hype train is going faster and faster. Ford, we've seen Ford, Ford's Lincoln. It was an interesting find this week from our friend on Reddit, If Winter Ends, found that the Lincoln, the dealership, that they had a charging station for the upcoming cars. I mean, Lincoln, for the 2020 models, they're going to launch two plug-in hybrids for the first time, and they also have an all-electric vehicle coming on the same platform as the Ford. Doesn't have a name right now, the Ford. It's just the Mustang-inspired EV that they are launching next year. Lincoln is planning to have a car on top of that platform under the home name. Anyway, they have a bunch of EVs coming. And they decided to make their own charging station with it. And they are building this out at their dealerships. But if you look at the station, we posted the image on Electrek. It looks extremely similar to the Tesla Supercharger. I mean, the same design with the Alu-Dal interior where the actual connector hangs, and very similar with the sides too, with the blue design accent on the side, and of course the logo on top, just like Tesla Supercharger. I would argue that the biggest difference is probably that the Alu-Dal interior is actually in the shape of the Lincoln logo, so can argue that, but overall it's clear where the inspiration is coming from here. But we made a post about it, but my main argument about the post is that we don't really care if they copy the design of the Supercharger. I think I doubt it that Tesla will sue or anything like that. What I'm saying though is you shouldn't stop there. Like, okay, copy the design. How about you copy the whole business model behind the Supercharger and build out your own Supercharger network in the US and in Canada too, and all of North America. Because in Europe, Ford is actually doing that through Ionity, which, I mean, is not a single woolly home charging network like the Supercharger is, but it's similar to Supercharger in terms of the overall business model. It's just that it's CCS charging station and it's backed by Volkswagen, BMW, Daimler, and Ford. I think Hyundai also joined recently, Hyundai Kia. Anyway, so they are sort of doing that in Europe. No such thing, though, in the US. They are still relying on the charge point of this world, of the EVgo, and then now Electrify America. So it would be nice to have like their own dedicated system there, but I doubt it's going to happen.
Yeah, some other differences, like that cord didn't even fit into the loop that they created, which is kind of like one of the elegant things about the Tesla Supercharger, where that cord is kind of lays in there, mm-hmm. and this cord is like longer. So like, I guess they didn't get that part. Also, it's level two, so that's not going to help anybody mm-hmm. really. Unless that's, you know, you're at your house and you have one of these big chargers. Clearly, I don't think any Lincoln is going to have a DC fast charge option. I think most Lincolns are plug-in hybrids that are planned. So
Well, the two that are coming next year are plug-in hybrid, but they also confirm that they're going to have a Lincoln based on the new
Mustang
inspired Ford. Yeah. So that's going to be the
right. And for by sure. the way, we're going to see that at the LA Auto Show next.
Supposedly.
I mean, I think it.
They haven't confirmed it yet, but they are unveiling an electric thing there. So we have to.
I think it's almost a lock that they're going to at least unveil what it's going to look like. So I think that'll be kind of exciting because now Ford is, you know, both feet is into the electrification. You know, they've had some plug-ins before, but they were pretty compliancy mild, you know, 100-mile milers.
So the Focus electric too.
Yeah, the Focus electric is. I'm always curious. Like whenever I see a Focus electric or even like a Honda Clarity, I'm always like, what made you decide to buy this one versus, you know, one of the longer range, better EVs out there? And it's always like, well, I got a great deal at the dealer, and I'm like, oh, like you got to do some more research. Anyway, Ford will have a real battery electric vehicle at the LA Auto Show likely, so that's exciting. Something to plug those.
Yeah, it's coming out next year, so
yeah.
So it's not around the corner, but it's pretty close. So yeah, I'm excited about Ford Zephyr. I mean, we were joking about them right now, like copying the system and everything. But with the new Mustang inspired one, leveraging the platform for that for a Lincoln, which I think is going to be like more competitive with maybe like Model Y type vehicle. Then there's the F-150 all-electric, which I think is a big deal, though they haven't confirmed exactly when that's coming. Might be a few more years away, so let's not get too excited. And they are all in with Rivian. I mean, $500 million investment is no joke, so you have to give them that, too.
And we know Rivian's like pretty serious at this point.
Yeah, very serious. Tesla Panasonic relationship. So I thought that was an interesting article this week that came out in the Wall Street Journal that did sort of type of deep dive into the Tesla Panasonic relationship, showing some hardship, really, showing that Panasonic, Mr. Tsuga, the CEO of Panasonic, it was painted as like the only proponent of Tesla, of the Tesla Panasonic relationship right now within Panasonic, because he's getting a lot of internal fight back over that. And I thought the Wall Street Journal article was interesting. It was fair for the most part, except for the way they painted the reason behind the hardship in the relationship between the two company was mainly like a culture clash, where how to manage Gigafactory 1, which is, of course, a bigger partnership between the two companies. Also, they are at Gigafactory 2, which they didn't touch much on. I'm sure that's true to a certain degree, but in my opinion, the biggest problem right now within Tesla's relationship with Panasonic is the fact that Tesla is looking to build its own batteries right now. They are making some clear move to move heavily into their own battery cell production, which will for the first time make them a direct competitor to Panasonic while having a buyer-supplier relationship with them. So that's clearly the biggest issue at hand, in my opinion. But still something interesting to keep in mind, because right now Tesla obviously still relies heavily on Panasonic for all its vehicle programs, except for Model 3 production in Gigafactory 3 in China, which is apparently starting next week.
And that's LG, right?
So LG Chem is supplying the cells for those. But still, I mean, Tesla still needs Panasonic a lot, and vice versa, I would assume, because Tesla is, of course, the biggest consumer battery cell in the world. So Panasonic wants them as a client still. But the Wall Street Journal described things like them arguing over costs. Well, like Elon consistently asking them to reduce the cost of the battery cell, while Panasonic says agreed to it, but said that it's only temporary until you can achieve profitability, and then we want to recuperate some of our costs back and increase battery cell output. And if you had to go on to Panasonic CEO was supposed to visit Tesla Gigafactory 1 and Elon Musk, and Tesla canceled the last minute and Panasonic sent the CEO sent an email to Elon Musk saying things like, I hope we're going to see you soon. Sorry if we missed you. I hope we're going to see you soon. And the emails remain unanswered and stuff like that. Almost like a sad, like, Elon ghosting him almost. Felt like, part of it was also described because, Kurt Kelty was longtime head of battery, production, battery development at Tesla, who used to be a longtime Panasonic executive, left earlier this year or last year. Maybe last year. Left last year, and he was the liaison between Tesla and Panasonic. He left, so that became an issue. Then Tesla recruited somebody else at Panasonic to do the liaison between Tesla and Panasonic, and that guy left earlier this year. So now it's like the two main guys that spoke Japanese, that were very familiar with the way Panasonic ran the business, and were sort of acting as a mediator within Tesla because, again, of that culture clash that they've been talking about. Now it's becoming more difficult. So I think something to keep an eye on because, again, Tesla relies a lot on passing battery production. But the exciting thing is that Tesla is moving into their own battery production. We reported on that based on a little piece of information over the last few months, really. Last weekend, just after the podcast, we learned that there was another big news on that front where Tesla acquired another company based in Canada, which there's been some misreporting about the acquisition. A lot of people call them a battery manufacturer. They're not a battery manufacturer. They don't produce their own battery cells, at least as far as we know. It is not, or as far as they said even. The company is called iBar System, and they'd be better described as a battery manufacturing in an engineering expert, where they make equipment to manufacture battery cells. So they haven't manufactured cell themselves, but they make all the equipment to manufacture cells. So if Tesla wants that, it's pretty clear why they want to build their own equipment to manufacture their cells. And however, they did receive a grant last year from the National Research Council in Canada for a $2 million grant to build their own high-speed lithium battery manufacturing system. So it sounded like they were creating their own production line, though we don't know if that's been completed or not yet. They have about 80 employees based on LinkedIn. They've been around for a long time, a few decades. And in 2006, there was a management buyout of the company. So all the management has been owners of the company. So they have a very engineering heavy executive team, and now they are being absorbed by Tesla, apparently. We also reported on Tesla's other battery-related acquisition, Maxwell, this week. We speculated, and a lot of people speculated about the reason for the Maxwell acquisition, which was, of course, a much bigger acquisition than this, I would assume. It was $200 million acquisition. Maxwell was like his main business, his revenue-making business, is ultra capacitors. That's what they were known for. That was they making. But more recently, they've been moving in lithium-ion batteries. They've been moving into that for dry electrode with a new dry electrode technology that's been interesting for being safer, more cost-effective too, and potential for higher energy density and higher longevity of the battery cell. So all very interesting thing for Tesla. So a lot of people assume that that's more why they were doing that, but we could confirm it this week with some slewing of some of the staff that Tesla has been absorbing. We reported on Yu Zhong, who was the lead scientist for Maxwell Dry Electrode Company product, and he posted on LinkedIn that he worked with the business development guy at Maxwell to develop the technical product for his dry electrode, and he even mentioned that, I'm quoting, that's what led to the acquisition of Maxwell by Tesla. So pretty clear that dry electrode was the goal here. But the question remains, like, what Tesla plans to do with the ultracapacitor business, which, again, is the biggest part of the business for Maxwell. Chris Stewart, we now list his job as the head of Maxwell ultracapacitors at Tesla, says that 225 people at Maxwell works on ultracapacitors, and it's a $100 million business for the company. Again, it was a $200 million acquisition. So it's basically half the company. Based on the job listings that we've seen for ultracapacitor at Maxwell, Tesla is currently integrating the ultracapacitors business into their business, and everything is business as usual. So they keep sending out the ultracapacitors. So of course, I have to assume that's based because of the fact that they already have supply contracts that they have to fulfill. So the question is more, what happens after those contracts? Does Tesla continue the ultracapacitor business? Do they stop it? Or do they even try to integrate them into their own products, which is the bigger and most interesting question probably. Interestingly, we also figured out what the ultracapacitors that Maxwell produce are used for right now. And they are mainly used for plug-in hybrids to use while they shift from the electric mode, all electric mode. So when a plug-in hybrid runs on electric mode, it runs on the battery pack. But for the transition period between the shift from the electric to the engine kicking in, they use Maxwell ultracapacitors for that moment. Kind of interesting move, especially that now Tesla supply those two PHEV manufacturers, even though Tesla has notoriously been against plug-in hybrids. They've been all electric.
In addition to that, they've been notoriously bad at supplying parts to other manufacturers. You know, so if you ask a Toyota RAV4 electric EV like owner who has a charge controller problem, it takes a long time for Toyota to get that part from Tesla. In addition, it takes, maybe that's Toyota's problem. I don't know. I don't want to put the blame on Tesla, but, also Mercedes, kind of unceremoniously killed the B class EVs, leaving those owners kind of stranded as well. Also, I think it's important to note that, ultracapacitors, a car doesn't have to be an ultracapacitor car or a battery car. Like ultracapacitors could help, during a fast charge, kind of distributing the power of a high power charger to the batteries even after you leave the charger. So you could charge up really fast in like 5 minutes, fill up this ultracapacitor, and then as you're driving away, the power from the ultracapacitor could be going into the motor, but also back into the batteries for a longer term storage. I think the problem with capacitors is that the power dissipates from them, you know, without regard to if they're being used or not. I'm not an expert, obviously, but I think there's a lot of usages of ultracapacitors. It's not just a black and white situation. This hybrid thing is a good example. Mm-hmm. Also, one last thing, it's interesting to note that Elon Musk's initial kind of road to electric vehicles was his study of ultracapacitors at Stanford, I think, when he was getting his master's of PhD in physics.
He was getting PhD.
So that's kind of interesting. I mean, he's clearly pretty knowledgeable of the subject matter. So pulling in this company with the ultracapacitor capabilities may have some very interesting ramifications for the future of Tesla vehicles.
Mm-hmm. All right. If you are listening from Northern California right now, you might have some issues with your power, or your neighbors or towns around you might have some issues, because PG&E right now is having some troubles due to the risk of wildfires right now in Northern California. Well, I say risk, but there actually are there's always wildfires around, but the situation was worsening over the last few weeks due to dry weather and also forecasting of strong winds. And as a preventive measure, they decided to shut down a lot of their power system, their infrastructure, to reduce risk. And they are going through a whole inspection of their entire infrastructure before powering the system back up. So I heard between 500 million to 1 million people were without power in Northern California this week. So that was a big issue. Of course, for Tesla owners, then you have the issue of maybe not be able to charge your car at home, or if the local charging solution is affected by the power outages, that's also an issue. So Tesla this week sent out a warning through their in-car system, which is interesting. Like Tesla can really like pop you up a warning in it. And they warned that if you could be affected by those power outages, and you should get a full charge, because of course, as you know, Tesla recommends you not to daily charge 100% for the longevity of your battery pack. Most owners do between 80 and 90%. So that was interesting itself. But then Elon came out and saying that all the affected superchargers in Northern California, they are working to install power packs there. And they want to do it as soon as possible. They want to do it right now. Of course, he said that they are currently applying for permits, so I'm sure it's gonna take minimum a few weeks, if not months. That's nice, but I'm not sure that much I can do by itself, because I mean, a power pack, unless they do that and they do like diesel generator at the same time, they have to do something else, because the power pack at best is 200 kilowatt hours, so it charges a few cars and then it's empty. So you have to have like solar attached to it to keep the battery pack full so that it can just charge to the supercharger, or you need like a diesel generator as a temporary solution or something. So not a complete solution. Musk did add that they're also working to add more solar at their supercharger, which is something that we thought at least was starting to happen with like the Vegas supercharger, the first full-fledged supercharger V3. And if you remember back in 2016, Elon said linked the increased deployment of solar at supercharger station to the deployment of supercharger V3, which is starting now to happen in larger scale. So they're saying that front. Insider news. It's over for Dyson. Which most people know more as a vacuum company, of course, or some, like, different type of small appliances too. Over the past few years, we've been reporting on their quite large scale effort to build electric cars. I mean, they were talking about a $2.5 billion investment into electric vehicles, and they hired 600 people to work on the project. They started converting an airfield in the UK to like a test facilities, and they were looking into buying factories. They bought, of course, also the Sactic, the solid state startup. And at first it was looking that they were going to release the first electric vehicle with a solid state battery. Of course, that didn't happen, but they announced this week that they're shutting down the whole project altogether. The whole project is being shut down, and they said it's not commercially viable.
That's pretty big news, like because they were also taking a lot of UK taxpayer money to build that the factory, and
£16 million.
Yeah, it's like, and you know, like rent. How did they just arrive at this decision that they weren't viable right now? Like, what? Like, did the batteries not work out, or the solid state didn't work out, or?
I think they were kind of over the place. I mean, at first it was supposed to be built in the UK, then they bailed out and they went to Singapore. Then they tried to buy a Honda plant, a former Honda plant. That didn't work out either. So I think they were just like scrambling to make it work, and it didn't come up. And then they tried to sell it, apparently. There were some rumors that they were trying to sell the entire project, but then what were they selling? They did file a few patents on technology and stuff like that. They did own all the IP from Sactic, so I don't know exactly what they were trying to do here, but it's a multi-billion dollar investment in EVs. But I don't think they reached the full multi-billion dollar investment. I mean, I'm sure they invested a few hundred millions by now, but the $2.5 billion was supposed to be up until production. It was supposed to bring the car to production, and of course, that never happened. So, all right. You just talked about the Toyota Tesla RAV4 EV. So today, Toyota they didn't fully unveil, but they unveiled the look of the car, and they announced that the RAV4 2021 is going to have a plug-in hybrid version. Which is exciting because there's not many plug-in hybrids for Toyota, but it's exciting to the point until you remember that in 1997, Toyota had a fully electric RAV4. I think it's 97 to 2003, and then like 2011 to 2014, which was the second generation with Tesla. But even before that, they had their own first generation all-electric RAV4 two decades ago. And now, 2021, they're coming up with the plug-in hybrid ones. So there's that.
It's hard to get excited about that when the past is there. And frankly, like, Toyota is way behind on electrification in general. It sounds like Toyota had an event where they invited some journalists out. Kind of some stuff I heard around the water cooler at the Chevy event. They are really trying to, you know, brand themselves as electrification people. I think they're going to have all their vehicles electrified. But if you dive deeper into that, electrified in a few years, like I think by 2025, that includes what are called soft hybrids, or which is basically a Prius, which doesn't have a plug.
Mild.
What's that?
I think they call it.
I think they call it mild hybrid. And so this is kind of a little bit, I mean, from my opinion, this is like smoke and mirrors from Toyota, a little bit too little too late. I would like to see them really kind of step up their electrification efforts. And I'm not excited about a RAV4 that, you know, what's it going to have? Like 20 to 30 miles of range if it's anything like their Prius Prime. So,
yeah. We don't know, but it doesn't really matter because right. It's 2021. How many great SUVs, all electric SUVs, is going to be available in 2021? It's going to be tons of them. Tons. There's already quite a few pretty good right now, but in 2021, there's going to be like three times as many from a bunch of different brands. And I think it's going to be harder than ever to sell a plug-in hybrid in that scenario. Going to be a few people that are going to still want, I want the all-electric when I'm driving around in a long distance. I want to still have gas. But those people that are like are not fully sold on all-electric just yet, the population is going down very quickly. So I think it's just a bad investment from Toyota, but it's not surprising. We're talking about a company that's doubling down on hydrogen at the same time as they announced that RAV4 PHEV, they announced the new generation of the Murray, which granted is looking better, looks better. Well, actually, they didn't see the new generation. Well, there's going to be a new generation and they're going to unveil in Tokyo next week or next month a concept for the new generation. The concept looked a lot cooler than the current version of the Murray, but we'll see. We're also talking about the company that's been trash-talking EVs for all-electric cars forever and talking about their hybrids as self-charging electric cars. We all remember those ads from Toyota and Lexus that talk about their mild hybrid as being electric but self-charging because you put gas in it and the gas engine charges the battery, which is an insane way to say that. They don't say what I just said. They say self-charging the battery pack. I mean, it's not yourself who's charging it. It's the gas engine and the gas.
Every car has an alternator and a 12-volt battery. So every car on Earth is a self-charging hybrid in this case. So
yeah, exactly. Yeah, so on the 12-volt system instead of a 48-volt system, big deal. Like, big difference. So yeah, I'm finding a hard time to get behind Toyota's plans for electric, and I got on a Twitter spat with them today after at least the UK Toyota, they tweeted defended the article that I posted and then claimed to be the cleaner in Europe, the cleanest automaker in Europe, and the chart that they posted, it didn't include Tesla like anything like that, and their argument was like Tesla is like the 20, it's not, doesn't sell enough to be on that list. But the list wasn't of the 20 best-selling automakers. It was the cleanest automakers. We have the cleanest fleet. And of course, the argument is that by 2025, all our model lines is going to be electrified. But we just explained what they mean by electrified. It doesn't mean much, really. So anyway, telling you, some giants are going to fall with the electrification movement. And right now, Toyota is near the top of my list as a giant that could fall. That's pretty much it for us this week. Thanks a lot for listening and watching on YouTube. We're going to see you same time, hopefully same time, same place next week. Ciao.